And I think this radio would need to be. This radio would need to be modified.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I find that I have to introduce a topic each time we talk about it. You know, I have a sense that under apartheid the finance ministers used to do a budget in March and then run out of money in the course of the year, and every time they run out of money, they would find the money somewhere generally in the pension fund, and then do what they call a mini bakurta. And for some reason, the press still thinks that this is a mini bakurta we do. And despite what we plead with them, times without number, they continue to call this thing a mini budget, which this is distinctly not. But it appears that once they've made up their mind, the facts will not get in the way of the story. It's not a mini budget. It seems to me that the policy statement is in fact the changes to the documentation this year are designed to draw attention to that fact. And perhaps I need to go back there and explain that when we first introduced the medium-term budget policy statement, and we did so at the end of October, we said that we are very mindful of the fact that as Parliament will always be constrained in respect of its ability to amend the budget. But if in good conscience we place before Parliament the thinking that is the best information available at this point in the year, and I want to emphasize that at this point in the year, we have the following information at our disposal. Firstly, we have information available from 6 months of the fiscal year, which generally tends to be a fairly good indication of trends over the year. So we have a sense of the decisions that we took last year and of the ability of departments to spend. And I think that if you ask either the DG or the Deputy DG for the Budget Office or a number of other people employed in the Treasury, they'll be able to give you a sense now of what the role of this will be. We can see that. We also have a sense of those departments that might have to cede unspent resources to the Treasury. We have that kind of sense, and so to do it in October, when we have the September information available, is exceedingly important. The second batch of information we have available is the most recent quarterly bulletin of the Reserve Bank, which we would accept as an authoritative source on a series of economic releases. the last having been released about the middle of September. So we have that information available. Thirdly, in the course of the budget cycle, what we do is we ask the ministers to motivate adjustments to the baseline, which is a 3-year baseline. We ask them to do this in about July. This year was amended slightly. We did it early August because of the introduction of the medium-term strategic framework. At the time of the cabinet report line in July. So we ask colleagues to motivate adjustments to the baseline. We then set in train the process of evaluating this called the MTEC process, where presentations are made to a cross-section of treasuries, the presidency, public works, and the chair of the particular cluster. Rising from that, a series of recommendations. So we are now in the process of finalizing the recommendations and allocations for the next 3 years. So this is not an exercise thought of to create some pretense in Parliament in respect of its oversight. The inputs of Parliament are actually fundamentally so that is primarily the purpose of the exercise. That we do an adjustment estimate at the time of by the time. We can do it like we did a few weeks ago, we can do it at a different time. The key object of the exercise here is to invite Parliament to make its inputs into what we consider necessary in the shaping of the budget to be tabled in February next year. Now, apart from those issues mentioned, there are a series of other matters that we take account of. One of them, I mean, in arriving at a fiscal envelope, we would start with our own evaluation of macroeconomic projection, and given time and circumstance, the impact of various factors would be considered differently. Very important in this year's assumption that we show is the extent of global uncertainty. Presentation deals with some of the downside risks, but you know the write down by the Wall Street banks is only part of what has flowed out of the subprime crisis. There are a series of other issues that impact quite directly on the financial on the sector. But I think that we're also dealing with issues related to trade, global imbalances, amongst other things. You're seeing the oil price correction. The presentation will deal with that. I think that it probably has greater weight in our analysis this year than what it may have had in previous years. The second issue, which is important, is that based on our own analysis, we examined the trend growth not in order to, no, in order that nobody is deluded. We want to get to that 6% growth, the trend line that is considered, and we don't want to confuse ourselves because we've had 3 years of growth of around 5%. We don't want to confuse ourselves believing that the trend line is at 5%. We need to then understand what the binding constraints are to reach 6%. So the discussion of trend line growth is important for that reason, but it's also important so that we can separate out the revenue, that which is
structural and the result of efficiency gains and a good resonant response to tax policy, and that which is cyclical, arising from, amongst other things, the impact of high commodity prices. We don't want to pull those revenues into tax deductions or anything like that. So we've taken a view of that, and one of the big changes introduced in the way in which the budget should be discussed in a house like this in the period ahead would include a cyclical budget balance, that we don't focus narrowly on the budget balance itself, but try and understand what is happening in the economy. And I'm sure the DG will in a moment entertain the committee with a long discussion on the HP footprint. All kinds of things that go into trying to explore. But in the budget balance itself, we now have constructed a surplus over the medium term, and that is something that we must talk about in the context of the international situation and also the cyclical budget balance. We've never taken a view on tax policy at this time, so the chapter 4 of the medium of the statement is actually quite brief. There's no adjustments to any tax rate offered in there. Those decisions have traditionally been taken in February, so that there's no arbitrage gap. But in the current year, we're looking at a situation where the revenue overruns are substantially smaller than what we've seen in previous years. And we've done the analysis, and we think that the overruns are a consequence of two sets of issues. The one, the inflation factor within the revenue numbers, and the second is the higher than budgeted for wage settlements across the economy. So there's no super taxes sitting around in company profits and so on. We have to understand that. I think that we're dealing with a different environment. On the spending side, Chairperson, I think it's the Chapter 6 issues that are important, which is the division of revenue. A lot more going to local government. Why? That needs to be gone through. The kind of preferences that we are incoming from the national basis, we're looking at the long-term potential budget. Again, the idea that this is the time when you allocate to departments and you've announced this, and if departments aren't on the list, then you somehow have open. That could be quite fine. And the object is the exercise. The last point I'd like to make before asking the DG, or handing over to the DG, Chair, is we're trying to push for some efficiency gains at national government. So we've flagged a number, 2.3 billion cash. Call it 700 million a year. So we would like to see saved from what I call bells and whistles. We're saying, we're going to watch this closely. We're saying to Parliament, through all of the committees, when departments come with a measurable objective in the estimate of national expenditure in February next year, let's ensure that we understand exactly what those targets are.
let's ensure that we can hold a high level of accountability, that you can hold a high level of accountability. And try and convert from what may be inefficient expenditures into frontline service. I don't want to mention any examples, but as I sit here, the examples bounce around in my head. Let me leave it at that. It's not something to show me the that we place it before farmers because it's one of the very important considerations that we think can actually do so much to improve and service delivery. 700 million of rand a year may not seem like much to members of the committee, but I guarantee it can go quite this in a focused kind of way with an emphasis on service delivery improvement. So that's in essence what we've offered in 75 pages and 6 chapters. But I'm going to ask with your permission, sir, for the Director General to talk to some of the
Thank you, Chair. Where's my document? So So by Kino, I think a higher goal on a sustainable base, we must focus on a number of issues. Firstly, accelerating economic growth and the rate of investment, creating more job opportunities, investing in community services and growing the social needs, improving the effectiveness of the state, including combating crime and promoting a service-oriented culture, and lastly, building regional and international partnerships for growth and development. This has been the basis on which we approach this medium-term climate policy. Economic growth has been good. Living standards have been boosted by higher wages, lower interest rates, and personal income tax relief. We have seen a rise in employment, we have seen an increase in house and asset prices, which has raised South African standards of living not just higher, it has also made South Africans feel rich. There's a significant share of the economic success redistributed through the system. The economy has boosted taxes and lower interest rates. This has allowed government expenditure to grow strongly. Later on, I will show how from 1995 that the real terms have basically doubled. The social wage has consistently increased over the period. Transfers to households have also grown. Public sector remuneration and employment have recently been boosted. And lastly, the growth in capital spending has improved access to and the quality of services. Where has this growth come from? The growth in South Africa has been driven in the main by two factors, consumption and investment. What you see here is that the line there shows household consumption. And in the period from 2003 to just about 2006, growth was actually accelerating very, very robustly. It has been sort of like flattened. So it has just moderated. We didn't have a lot in household consumption expenditure. The good news for South Africa is that whereas in that earlier year, you had very strong consumption, around 2001, household consumption expenditure.